Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the island chained nation paradise in the sunny slave South Pacific, with all the Fukushima radiation so that when you go out sunbathing you can still soak up the rays. And my very special guest today is Mark Salat. Is that how you pronounce it, Mark?
It would be Mark Salat, similar to
To a high school teacher.
I guess so.
Especially after testing season and pop quizzes, because they marks a lot. All right, so would you be able to explain to me just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Well, I'm actually an amateur researcher with a knack for connecting dots, so to speak. I'm a tattoo artist. I work out of Chronic Tattoo in San Diego, California. And in my spare time, I like to research, matters that are of a deeper interest to humanity. That's basically it.
Care to elaborate? More to the point, what started you off on this wee little journey?
Oh, well, actually, I got curious about astrology and numerology and decided to try it out on myself and do my own readings, you know, after trying, you know, some online sources and, you know, discovered a little bit more about myself. And decided that I'd start looking into other avenues of this. And something led me to Freemasonry, because I think it was the whole conspiracy theory thing. And that led to research into UFOs. I know that's kind of a wide jump there, but I ran across an article dealing with this Nazi UFO subject. And they spoke of a specific star. And that got me to thinking, you know, what the hell is this star and what's so special about it? Well, I come to find out that it is in the constellation Taurus. And that it was represented by the bull, you know, big deal. But I started looking around into other ancient religion and started noticing the symbol showing up quite a bit and decided to look into that.
And what did you find?
Well, what I found is that it's a very prominent symbol in nearly every religion on the planet, at least in the northern hemisphere. so far as I can tell. And it spans a pretty large length of time, you know, going back well outside the realm of what astrologers would call the Age of Taurus. I mean, this goes back into cave paintings that are at least 20,000 years old. We have similar symbolism found at the site of Göbekli Tepe, Turkey, which seems to depict the same thing on one of these pillars that they have there as what's found in ancient Egyptian and iconography.
Go on.
Well, namely, the depiction of the goddess Hathor. And I always wondered, okay, why are they depicting this solar disk in red, you know? Well, come to find out by doing a little bit more research on it that maybe it's not the sun, which in other artwork, I guess you could say it is depicted in yellow. The moon is depicted as a moon would be depicted, but I got curious as to why it's in the center of the horns, why something that's like the site of Göbekli Tepe would have the same type of imagery. And that got me to doing research on the star and research into linguistics and etymology. And so I decided to go and find out what the etymology on the source was. We'll just say God. And what I found out was that the word God in all capital form comes from a Proto-Germanic root. And the Proto-Germanic root word was Gudan. Well, I didn't really pay too much mind to that at first, but I ran across the name of the particular star in a Babylonian star catalog, and the name of that is Mul Gudan Na. So I got to thinking, I wonder if that has anything to do with this Proto-Germanic root of Gudan, because basically you simply take off Mul and An off the word and you're left with Gudan. And if that's really the root of the word, then it does come from Sumeria.
In Sumeria, of course, being a very ancient, quite sophisticated culture that, according to some archaeologists that I've spoken to, miraculously, like out of nowhere, just somehow instantaneously developed high levels of mathematics, engineering, architecture, civics, a justice system, and all of these other things. It's like, yeah, we're scratching around in the rocks in the desert and all of a sudden we're a sophisticated society. I wonder how that happened.
Poof, we're here. But they seem to explain it in some of their creation myths, which seems to tie into biblical creation myths, such as, the creation of humans as applied or taken from the Marduk legend, where it says that he had sacrificed a god known as Kingu, which might be where the word kin comes from, but that's another story. And he mixed Kingu's blood with clay, which would, wouldn't that make the clay red? Anyway, then you examine the word Adam and Edom in the Hebrew language, and you find out that Adam and Edom both mean red, or red all over. So if Adam was created from clay and his name means red, it would stand to reason that it more than likely follows the ancient Sumerian accounts.
Well, what exactly is the ancient Sumerian kind of like, oh, well, this is the way everything was created. Did they explain how their civilization was created and the sophisticated nature of it or no?
Well, as far as I can ascertain, that the information was handed down by what is known as the Anunnaki.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the visitors from another world.
Right. You know, and that seems to be the consensus when you butt that up against the Hebrew Bible, you know, as far as the Elohim, the plural Elohim saying, let us create man in our image, in our likeness. Who's our? That implies more than one.
So
that monotheistic religion is implying there's more than one God? That must mean that it might not be the original religion. It might be an attempt at uniting what was believed at that particular moment in time. So basically, compiling the stories from contemporary civilizations into one book and stating that as religious law.
So it's not the God, it's the gods, plural.
Pretty much, you know, but one thing it seems or appears that they're trying to do is to obfuscate themselves into being perceived as the God, the prime creator. But it seems like they slip up a couple spots and let us know that this is a plural group of entities we're talking about.
What do you reckon, the gods are still around today?
That's tough to say. We're in quite a predicament now, aren't we? I'm not convinced that they left, but I'm not entirely convinced that they're in the same form, I guess, that they were in those days.
What, so your reptilian shapeshifters or David Icke talks about?
Not quite. I'm not really big on that side of it. More or less genetically bred themselves into the society, and you wouldn't know if you were talking to one or not.
I think I was interviewing somebody, might have been yesterday or the day before or something like that, and they were telling me that this elite kind of Anunnaki bloodline has been diluted yet kept throughout thousands of years, and it's gotten to the point where they actually do have different DNA to us. They look just like we do, but their DNA is very, very different, and they are capable, I think, over that time of getting rid of parts of the genetic code of humans, like empathy, love, compassion, those kind of good things that we really define as being some of the greatest parts of the human character, creativity, you know.
Right, I agree.
And they've allegedly had to keep this all secret because they can't go to public hospitals or anything like that, because they'll pull a tube of blood and just go, what the f-? You know.
Right.
It'll be like an alien or something like that. It's like, why are my hypodermic needles melting?
Right.
I don't know. I'm just making that up. but you know, if there was, and I entertain the thought that, let's say, you know, just for the sake of argument, there's a bunch of ruthless criminal alien scumbags that are actually ruling the planet in human form and what have you. One has to wonder now, what if that thought process isn't true? What if they're actually just human, just like you and me, and by saying that they're not, we're promoting some kind of dehumanization agenda, the same thing these scumbags have been doing to humanity for the rest of the history?
Right, I agree with that. I agree that any future action that may take place should be based on action and intent rather than any type of racial connotation.
Mm. Occupy managed to combine action and being intense at the same time.
Well, basically by kind of keeping an eye on how things are manifesting, you know, the actions our politicians may be taking over here in the U.S. We're supposedly being forced to buy a healthcare program that nobody really wants.
I saw a great post on Facebook today. It's a stormtrooper with his head in his hands, just saying, "I really don't like Darth Vader, but if I criticize him, all the other stormtroopers will attack me and call me racist because Darth Vader's black."
Right. Yeah, that race card. See, that's the intent I'm talking about. You know, this seems, it has the appearance of being planned and implemented over large increments of time. And it's getting to the point where it's reached a fever pitch, and, you know, it seems like it's either now or never to these guys. And, you know, the more you look around, the more our liberties are being stripped away, the more the Constitution, at least here in the United States, isn't being paid attention to. It's just another piece of paper to these guys.
Well, I've got this. I don't know what is going on specifically, and that's because I'm a generalist. You know, I don't go into the nitty gritty details. What is or isn't actually 100% going on? Just kind of try to listen to some of the people that do, and I might forget like half of it or something like that. But I got this feeling that I'm actually on the right path, and I am slowly figuring stuff out because I'm not arrogant enough to think that I've got it all figured out already. Do you share that intention?
Yes, pretty much so. I explore a lot of this occult side of things, and I notice there's a lot of good intentions. People really mean well, but they're full of malarkey, as far as I can tell. I don't claim to have it all figured out, but what I seem to have run across is backed by scientific evidence and kind of refutes some of these claims that have been made for quite some time now, at least a couple hundred years.
Have you noticed that science has kind of been corrupted? You know, it used to be, I think the creators of science, a lot of the principles, were in fact deeply religious men. And all of them believed, I think, that science was about measuring and having tools to measure the physical world, you know, the things that were in this particular 3D realm, and they stipulated, or at least I believe they do, if I remember correctly, that it was never the intention of developing the scientific methodology to eliminate God.
Right.
But that's what's happened, isn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, so that's why I took the path of, okay, let's look into what some of these religious beliefs are. And I'm doing it from a very generalist approach myself. So the synopses pretty much give the gist of what the literature actually contains. So without, you know, spending hours and hours in this actual literature, I'm, you know, kind of taking other people's word for it that may have a greater knowledge, people that have actually stuck their nose in the book and read every single word. But, and some of that has led me to not necessarily the conclusion, but to the opinion that some of what's being said is true and some of what's being said is false.
How do you find out what the difference is between a falsehood and a truth? I was talking before about Jan Ervin teaching people the trivium, you know, putting your grammar before your logic. You've got to ask those questions, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, before you start wondering about intention. And I was kind of looking about conspiracy in and of itself. Okay, so let's say a government department comes up and they say, we're going to do this, this, and blah, 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 and it's going to be really good for the community and the working poor and so on and so forth. And then it turns out that all they're doing is basically destroying the working poor and attacking people's freedoms and sovereignty and taking away their freedom of speech and detained without warrants and what have you. So what they say their intention is to help people, but what the effect of what they're doing is hurting people, I think that actually explains what the real intent is. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. That's why, you know, watch what they're doing. Listen to what they're saying, and then watch what they do, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and you will find out for yourself. You know, some of, getting back to how I ascertain the truth, some of it resonates with me, and some of it doesn't. It's that simple.
I'm wondering what's the determining factor between something you're willing to believe and something you're no longer willing to believe, you know? And would that change over time? I'm thinking that it really does, don't you think?
Yes, I 100% with you on that one. For the longest time with this whole UFO thing, I was like, oh, cool, little gray aliens come here every once in a while and they check us out. But the more I looked into it, I'm like, well, maybe it's not these little gray aliens and maybe it's not alien technology at all. And recently have been listening to a lot of Joseph P. Farrell's interviews. I've read one of his books, The Philosopher's Stone. Very good. A lot of very informative material in there. And he gets really, really into the details of moving the money around, the technology and the physics involved with the technology. And I'm kind of siding with him on the whole extraterrestrial origin of these UFOs that have been sighted all over the world. Well, the non-extraterrestrial, I should say. but I can't rule out that possibility. So until, you know, I guess, personally experience it, it's going to be hard to sway my my opinion on that matter.
Well, how strongly do you hold your opinions? Because my opinions can be changed on a dime, you know? It's like, I believe this, and it's like, but Vinny, there's this evidence here. Really? Oh, okay, I don't believe that anymore.
Well, right. I mean, that's why I've continued to dig into this particular theory that I have. And the more I dig into it, the more I seem to find things that corroborate what I quote-unquote believe.
Sorry, I don't quite follow.
Well, for instance, let's take this Pleiadian hypothesis. I decided to look into that, and the propagator of this was a guy named Billy Meyer out of Switzerland. And apparently he claims to have had contact with these Pleiadian people. I've looked at some of the photographs he's published since he's said this, and come to the conclusion that they were phonies. And some of the stuff that he talks about, some of the names that he uses, and some of his background being involved in the reading of some of these ancient texts, and then the names he chose to use to publish as what these Pleiaren, that he calls them, told them their names were. For instance, one of them was called Ptah, which is actually an ancient Egyptian god that's represented by a bull. Well, we have Ptah, and we have the constellation Taurus there. It's a bull, but did you hear about that from the Pleiaren, or did you hear about that while you were studying ancient religions?
Or did you hear about it while you were really baked in an underground club at some point?
Either way. And then he claims that they live on a planet called Era, E-R-R-A, and that that planet orbits a star called Teget. Well, it just so happens that there is a star that science has deemed too young to really be habitable, because it's a B-type star that has a big circumstellar dust cloud around it, and they've detected planets out to I think it was like 1500 light years away. So the Pleiades only being 500 light years away, I'm sure if there's planets around it, they more than likely would have detected them. So it just seems like, yeah, either he was baked in a club and making this all up, and I'm going to make some money off of this. And but the incredible amount of people that seem to follow this just baffles me. I'm like, are you serious? And then they're serious.
I got a joke about that. What did the three wise men say when a star started talking to them and told them that the son of God was just born? Bro, bro, are you serious?
That brings up another interesting thing. I noticed that most of the information, especially in the 1800s, about Sirius came from fellows of the Royal Society. And the Royal Society, I believe, was known as the Invisible College before it became the Royal Society. And they were followers of, what is his name, Boyle? Something Boyle. I can't remember right now. But anyway, there was a few French and German astronomers, and they apparently had done some mathematical calculations on the proper motion of this particular star and predicted that there was at least one star that you can't see with the naked eye that orbits it, known as Sirius B. Then a few years later, an American astronomer actually confirmed that. But I'm wondering, if the German that actually did the calculations didn't figure out that there might be three stars around that star and just didn't publicize it for a while. Because in, I believe it was 1893, there was an expedition into Dogon territory to observe an eclipse, in which these French astronomers went into French-controlled Mali and more than likely spoke with the locals there, probably passed the information on to the curious locals about what they were doing there. And 30-something years later, we got Marcel Grial going and living with the Dogon, and they just happened to tell him about their legends, and it includes information about that star that they could have gotten from the French astronomers when they were over there doing their expedition. Did you follow me on that one?
Not really. I'm just gonna be honest with you.
Oh, well, anyhow, the whole premise of the Sirius mystery is pretty much confounded by that one event. The book that Robert Temple wrote is been refuted by a lot of different people on basically the same grounds, and when you do independent research and find out the same thing, then you can start to go, okay, well, this is probably true. These people probably gave them this information. And so much for that one, you know. Plus, if there were stars around Sirius and it is so close to us at, what, 8.6 light years away, I'm pretty sure we would have detected any kind of planetary system or anything like that by now.
I've become like this perpetual doomsday naysayer. Like somebody says, Comet Eisen's going to kill us. It's like, ugh. You know, hidden your hands, just go, Frank, did Y2K 2012 Nostra dumbass not teach you anything, you retards? The world's not going to end, okay? And even if I'm wrong, okay, what does it matter? Because it wouldn't matter if I was right or wrong, because we're all dead.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, somebody asked me once, you know, what are you going to do if it's actually confirmed, you know, like if there actually is the end of the world and it's coming? I said, well, for the first time in my life, I'll start living in denial. It's my doom. It's my doom. Yo. And everybody's just so freaked out about this kind of stuff. And every time I think, oh, God, what is it? It's going to end the world. Fukushima's going to end the world. Global warming's going to end the world. Comet Eisen or some of the Anunnaki will come and just you know, flatten everything in some kind of great galactic parking lot project or some crap. You know, who gives a frack how the world ends or if it's going to end or not? There's only one thing you really got to be concerned about. Not what's in the future or necessarily what's in the past, but what you can do right now to affect the future. Usually, it helps if you know what happened in the past.
Right. And that's, you know, I'm still pursuing, you know, research, and it just spiderwebs off in so many different directions and avenues that it's... I have to take it in very small bites to try to digest what it is that I'm saying, but I think I made some pretty logically sound connections as far as linking stuff to symbols and words. Because actually, the particular star... seems to be prominent in all these cultures. It's one of the four royal Persian stars, and has been determined to be something like 5,000 years ago. That belief has been held. And just following the proper motion of this particular star... on the particular program that I use, I can track it back to about 65 million years ago, and it seems to follow a path that bears a striking resemblance to the mythologies of the past, almost as if they were tracking the star and talking about it via mythology.
And what?
And so it also coincides with a couple of prominent civilizations' kings lists. Now, there's no physical way to tell if these people just made up this antediluvian beings that lived here, or, you know, if we're going to discover in the future that that was actually the case, you know, through archaeology or anthropology or genetics. But the star seems to coincide with the time frame that these kings lists describe. For instance, the Sumerian kings list states that their kings started their reigns about 240,000 years ago. That's a crazy amount of time. That's damn near impossible. And not only that, they say that their first king reigned for 28,800 years. Wow, that's quite a long time for one guy to reign, except for the fact that he's called Alu-Lim. And in Semitic language, the suffix lim is a plural that's similar to Hebrew leom, which means the people or nation. And then Alu, the beginning of the beginning word of his name, turns out to be the Akkadian name for the constellation Taurus. So if you put the two words together again, you've got Alu-Lim, the people of the constellation Taurus. And then when you break down the Proto-Germanic root of the word God, you've got Gudan, which is Mul-Gudana, which is the star Aldebaran. It's almost as if they're describing their rulers as being from that star. Now, there's some information that can be neither confirmed nor denied about the star actually having planets around it. And it seems that the type of planet that they will neither confirm nor deny, they won't confirm nor deny the age of the star either for some reason. But the type of planet is known as a hot Jupiter. It's got about it's about the same size as Jupiter, they say, but it has 11 times the mass. Well, this particular star is a red giant star, and it's stopped making hydrogen and helium and now makes carbon and oxygen, and it pushes out the layers of hydrogen and helium, which causes it to swell. So logically, I mean, we could probably ascertain that if there was a planetary system around it and it swelled up and cooked them all to death and they all disintegrated, turned into gases and just debris and recoalesced into a planet the size of Jupiter, that might potentially explain the mass associated with this planet they will neither confirm nor deny.
What? So you're saying this, what was it, planet Nibiru, yeah?
I wouldn't necessarily say Nibiru. What I'm saying is it has the telltale signs that it used to have a planetary system around it that was destroyed at one time, and the debris recoalesced into what is neither confirmed nor denied. You could find the ages on pretty much any other star in the sky, but this particular one, nope. I've searched astronomy websites, you name it, looked on NASA, any kind of observatory website for the information just concerning the age of the star, and nope, can't find one word about it.
So is that the only star in the entire sky that they haven't aged yet?
It seems like it. They say it's old, but they don't say how old. For instance, they say the Pleiades, they're, 100 million, 200 million years old? You can get an answer for that, but you can't get an answer for one particular red giant.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I wonder how you actually date stars and things like that.
Yeah, that brings up another problem. I can't really,
I mean, do you buy them a drink first, or what?
I hear they're not cheap dates, though.
But they are pretty hot.
Oh, yes, they are. Me too.
Yeah, yeah. And also quite bright. Now, thinking of you know, the Pleiadians and the Anunnaki and all of this other kind of stuff, there's another element here, which is the alien messiah complex. And a lot of people have this complex. Oh, I don't have to do anything to try and save the world from evil scumbaggery entities or whatever that are currently infecting our entire planet. No. The Pleiadians are going to save me. They're my space brothers.
Right.
I don't know about you, but the messiah complex of anything, you know, whether you think Jesus is Buddha or Shiva or George W. Bush is going to save you, is freaking insane, in my opinion. And I don't want to insult everybody's beliefs here, although I clearly just did. But the issue, as Alex Jones would say, the issue here is... the issue here is abdicating personal responsibility for your own life and the lives of those around you. That is something that I think is very important to think about whenever you talk about anybody who's going to come and save you. I mean, didn't Barack Obama say he's going to come and save our asses? You know, if anything, he's just blown more of them up. And
he's doing a great job, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, but you can't criticize him because then you're racist. You know, you can't criticize a politician if he's black. you know,
yeah,
or you're the racist. Well, this is what the savior messiah complex comes into, don't you think? It allows people to be easily manipulated, to abdicate their responsibility, and it allows these people who pose as your saviors to become your rulers.
Right, and that seems to be the one of the roots of the problem, is that people are very susceptible to this type of mind control. I don't think the Anunnaki are going to come back and save us. it's kind of ridiculous. But what I do think is that there is some pretty insidious plans, you know, whether it's Plan A, Plan B, Plan C, Plan D, whatever it is. One of them seems to revolve around using a type of technology after everybody's been indoctrinated into the ancient alien theory, that we're going to need to unite for to save the Earth against the aliens, when in actuality it's going to be, you know, our own military forces, if they agree to do that, utilizing technology that's been worked on in secret for years. That's just one aspect.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of elements that come to mind there. One is the propensity for religious fundamentalism around the people of this earth. The other is Project Bluebeam, which is capable, allegedly, of projecting 3D holographic images into the sky with, you know, Jesus coming out of the clouds or something of that nature. And then there's HAARP, which can indeed be tuned so that you can broadcast through HAARP audio signal that is interpreted by the brain, not the ears. So it feels like something's talking inside your head. And on top of that, we have classified military aircraft from, let's say, places like Area 51 and so on and so forth. And right. You combine all of those together, and you think about the Hegelian dialectic, you know, crisis or problem reaction solution. And I've always wondered, would the elite stage an alien invasion or a religious experience globally kind of thing, or something of that nature, using in tandem these different technologies in order to get humanity to think either A1 in the religious context, oh, we're all religious brothers now, there's no need to fight, let's have a one world government to ruthlessly kill and exterminate everybody that we don't like and that doesn't believe in the thing that they just saw, clearly. Or two, it's, oh, there's aliens up against us now. That means that it's aliens versus humans. So that way we need a one loving world government to ruthlessly enslave and exterminate all of us naughty humans in order to fight the aliens with a reduced population.
Right. It just, let me go back to that Pleiadian thing real quick and the Billy Myers story. He states that these beings live on a planet called Era that orbits Teget, which is an actual star in the Pleiades, Tegeta. Anyway, he says that the population on Era is exactly the same numerical amount that's listed on the Georgia Guidestones, 500 million. What a coincidence! Era is the plague god of the Sumerians somehow, and the Sabiti call on this plague god for the destruction of humanity, according to the generalized version of the story. So, you know, that kind of speaks to me with in a symbolic way of what this whole thing actually is being promulgated for, I guess. And you hit the nail on the head with the, oh, the aliens are going to come, we've got to unite to save the planet under a one world government type of situation, you know?
There's also the new religion, the new age religion.
It's
growing in size and scope and stupidity.
Right?
I mean, you know, I don't want to insult people, but look, a cult is a cult, regardless of whether or not you believe it's a cult. Okay, that's the end of the frickin' story. And I've seen, studied, and had a look at cults, belief structures, and the people that run them. And I've had a look at a lot of these new ages. It's the same freaking thing, bro. I see nary a difference.
Right. Yes, some of the things some of these people say to me on the internet, I'm just like, okay, but have you looked at this? If you're going to believe that our ancestors came from a star, and because it's written down, you know, has been written down for thousands of years, why don't we look at the science behind it then? Let's look at something that's at least plausible. And that's basically all I'm doing, putting what is at least plausible to this whole idea, you know, because it does make some sense. In other ways, it doesn't. But, you know, I'm still in the midst of actually sorting all of this information out. And it just seems to lead me into other areas. For instance, the Nazi UFO mystery. The legend says that a woman named Maria Orczyk, and she was allegedly a member or founder of this Vril Society, had received some channeled messages from beings that were from the Aldebaran system. And I thought, well, you know, that's basically what led me into looking into the star in the first place. I'm like, okay. But the messages she received were in a Templar script, and one in a language that was later determined to be ancient Sumerian. Well, that led me to looking into the word God and coming to that, not necessarily conclusion, but coming to that piece of the puzzle. It seems that in the search for the roots of the Aryan race, that they ran across some information that pointed them in the direction and into naming that star in the legend because of the Proto-Germanic root of the word God. And but there's other things involved there. You've got, and I hate to bring up his name because this family is involved in almost every damn scandal on the planet, but here we go with Prescott Bush again. Well, it turns out, you know, from what I can ascertain, and, you know, I can't really verify this with 100% accuracy, but what is being said is that this Prescott Bush guy was over serving as a field artillery captain in World War I between the years of 1917 and 1918. He was discharged in mid-1919. Well, the war ended in 1918. Well, he was also trained trained in intel by the French over there in Europe. And he wasn't discharged till mid-1919. Well, that kind of ties right in there with this whole Nazi UFO legend, where they met in 1919 at a forester's lodge in Berchtesgaden, Germany, and discussed this technology that was going on. About this disc-shaped real flying craft, basically a UFO. And I'm wondering, because where I got the information from also says that he was assigned a company of French officers, which would probably mean they were French intelligence officers, right? I'm wondering if this whole Tool Society and this whole Vril Society part of this story is basically covering up the fact that he was over there gathering intel about free energy technology to bring back to the U.S. His dad, in 1918, Samuel Prescott Bush, had something to do with the coordination of weapons contractors, and these Wunderwaffos, before they were called that, could have been weaponized technology. There's just these weird co-relations in there that would lead me to infer that he was over there. You know, and we all know that he's a member of a secret society funneling information back to his dad, who has close ties with the Rockefellers in the U.S. About potential weaponization of certain technologies. And then Henry Kissinger, talking about we need to depopulate the world, and we have George H.W. running the CIA during the Kennedy assassination. being involved with intelligence. We have HW in office as vice president when Reagan got up in front of the UN and started talking about UFOs and uniting the world if we were if we were faced with a threat from a force from beyond, whatever his exact words were. But all of this stuff kind of ties into there, and then if we needed to pinpoint a location where they're saying they're from, they kind of gave it away by saying that the information that was channeled came from beings from Aldebaran. You know, if that's actually the case, and then the symbolism, the religious symbolism anyway, ancient religious symbolism, kind of implies that in and of itself, with the time frames of the position of this star over vast amounts of time, and how it coincides with their kings lists. For instance, 50,000 years ago, a Greek, well, not 50,000 years ago, but a Greek historian, I forget his name right now, had done some type of calculation and said that the ancient Turin kings lists of Egypt go back to about 50,000 years ago. Well, coincidentally, that particular star was in a position where it would have appear that it was between the horns of the bull, which is exactly the type of iconography you see in ancient Egyptian art. And then back to the Sumerian kings list, that particular star at 330,020 years ago was the closest it had ever gotten to this solar system, which for an advanced civilization would have been close enough to permit travel. And if we're created in the image of God and we are creatures of convenience, then they would have waited for the most convenient moment to do so, being closest to our solar system. If that makes any sense.
What's the significance of that would be my question. But let's go to break now, and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.